From KLW San Francisco, it's Minds Over Matter, the Bay Area's favorite radio quiz show. Heard every Sunday night from 7 to 8 o'clock on 91.7 FM in the Bay Area and all around the globe on KALW.org. Our expert panelists tonight are moderator Dana Rodriguez and author Gerald Nachman. They're here to take your calls, so grab your pencils and paper, sharpen your wits, and get ready to call in and try to stump the panel with your questions and to answer theirs. The call-in number is 415-841-4133. And now your host and moderator, Dana Rodriguez.
Thank you very much, and welcome everybody to Minds Over Matter. We hope you had a lovely weekend and can give us an hour of your time tonight, because Minds Over Matter is, was, and always will be an audience participation quiz program. So, of course, we need your participation out there. So feel free to call us at area code 415-841-4134. Again, that's area code 415-841-4134. I'm sorry, I have a slight cold tonight. Hopefully, it's my first of the year. Hopefully, it'll be my last of the year as well. So bear with me on that. Again, that number is 415-841-4134. Our email address, if you'd care to email us with any sort of comment or question, is mindsovermatter@yahoo.com. That's mindsovermatter@yahoo.com. Mindsovermatter being one word or lumped together. And if you'd like to hear our show online, you can do that anywhere in the world as we know it, simply by going to kalw.org. That's kalw.org. And if you like a podcast of this show, it should be available afterwards, or not too, you know, in a reasonable amount of time after the show is over, at kalw.org, along with some of our older shows. So, that being said, and if there are any of you out there who for some reason can't get the podcast or it doesn't come up or whatever, just let me know and I'll see what I can do. As I said, we're going to start with a round of introductions and a round of questions. And here's the first. Jerry Nachman, who just bought a pumpkin and a box of C's Halloween and chocolate wafer Halloween. Oh, excuse me. I'm going to start that again. I'm going to do it right this time. Jerry Nachman, who just bought a pumpkin and a box of C's Halloween box of chocolate and orange and chocolate wafers is always happiest when he can hear the crunch of autumn leaves beneath his feet. I'm sorry. It just threw me off here because the Halloween was written over the box of orange. Sorry.
Okay. Well, this time of year, our moderator, Dana Rodriguez, thinks less of the crunch of autumn leaves and more of Nestle's crunch.
Sure. So that is us. I'll begin the questioning with Jerry Nachman.
Okay. only 5 books have been printed first in their entirety in The New Yorker. Mm-hmm. How many can you name? You got to get 3 for a coveted bill.
Hiroshima is one.
That's the first one, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So is that the first one chronologically?
What?
Is that the first one in a chronologically?
I'm not asking for that, but
no, I was just curious if it was.
But actually, I have them listed kind of chronologically. That
okay.
was the first.
Okay, all right.
John Hersey's book.
Yeah. That's 1945 or 6, I think.
A couple years later, I think.
You think so? Okay. All right. When was the last one, or how long ago was the last one?
I'm not telling you.
All right. So there are 4 more. All right, read the question.
I'm not sure when it was, to be honest. Only 5 books have been printed first in their entirety in The New Yorker magazine. How many can you name? Dana has got Hiroshima by John Hersey.
So these are full. For instance, I was thinking of The Haunting by not The Haunting, but The Lottery by Shirley Jackson. But that's not a.
But
really,
that's a reprint.
That was a reprint.
Well,
no, I thought New Yorker was the first to publish that. But it's not. It's not a full book. It's a story.
It's a story. Yeah, these are full books.
Okay,
that's a good distinction to make. Yes.
All right,
and I can tell you that all but one are nonfiction.
Oh, okay, all right. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
You're from Union City.
Hello.
Got a couple of questions.
Okay.
The first one is, which 2 members of the cast of the George Burns and Gracie Allen show died within 2 months of each other?
What 2 members of the cast of the George Burns and Gracie Allen show died within 2 months of each other?
Yeah, the same year.
Well, the only 2 I can think of are P. Benaderet and Fred Clark.
Yep, give herself a bell.
Oh, okay. Very good.
Played Blanche and Harry Morton.
Right.
Harry Morton, as George Burns
called. Prince played Harry Morton number three.
Yeah, there were several, yeah, right.
Yeah. So my second question, what religious epic was first broadcast with only one commercial interruption?
What?
What religious epic was first broadcast?
First broadcast with only one commercial interruption.
One commercial interruption.
The Robe?
Yeah, there's something with another bell.
Ooh, very good.
I'm hot tonight.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. What specifically do these two plays have in common? The Odd Couple and The Importance of Being Earnest. There's a very specific thing these two plays have in common.
You mean like structurally?
No, not structurally. What specifically do these two plays have in common? The Odd Couple and The Importance of Being Earnest.
Not structurally, okay.
Not structurally.
Okay. Well, they're both comedies.
Yes. Something like, not quite so broad.
I know. Wait. Well, you said not structurally. Okay.
Not structurally.
So is this something about, well, if it's not structurally.
It's a character-driven thing.
Character-driven.
Right.
Okay, that's good. Okay.
So what specifically do these two plays have in common? It's a character-driven thing. The Odd Couple and The Importance of Being Earnest. All right. And two performers, and you have to get both of them to get the bill, Jerry. Two performers have won Tony Awards portraying members of the opposite sex. Who were they? Two performers have won Tony Awards portraying members of the opposite sex.
They didn't change during the plot.
No, it was strictly portrayed a member of the opposite sex. Yes.
Okay.
So keep that in mind. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Yes, is this DS Cults of Richmond?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Oh, I'm sorry, I must be on. This is GS, just the initials, GS in Richmond.
Hi, GS.
Okay, very good. Up front, I've got to tell you, you guys asked the damn hardest question.
Well, we can't make them too easy, then everybody would get them.
Exactly. Well, I can't even say you find a good balance. You ask hard questions.
Oh, I think it's a good, I think we ask a few not so hard ones, but anyway, that's well, your, everyone.
Okay, in any case, I am among the literate. However, although I'm a techie, I specialize in things like physics and stuff like this. So actually, if I may, I just want to ask you guys one question.
Sure.
Just one.
Go ahead.
All right, may I? Okay. Does the title of your show imply that you or any of us do telekinesis?
No.
I didn't think so. That'll do. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I wish. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, this is Ron from Oakland.
Hi, Ron.
So you got a guess on the New Yorker book?
Yeah.
Would that have been Fate of the Earth by Jonathan Schell?
No, it is not.
Oh, because I read it in the New Yorker, the full book.
Well, okay. You sure it wasn't like a story? These were, all of these, I think, except for the fiction, were serialized over a couple, three
I'm
issues.
I'm going to check on that and get back to you next week.
Okay, that's no problem.
All right.
But I have a question for you guys.
All right.
Also, I had a question. I had a guess on the things that are in common with The Odd Couple and the Oscar Wilde play.
Right.
Was someone in The Odd Couple born in a handbag?
No, not quite that.
Okay. My question to you is, what was the price to park your car all day in Manhattan in 1958? And my source for this is an episode of The Naked City that's being shown on MeTV.
Oh, okay.
I'll say $2.
No.
Is that low or high?
That's a little high.
Oh.
$1.
I'll give it to you. 85 cents.
Wow. 1950, huh?
Times have changed.
1958.
That'll get you about 5 minutes now.
Yeah.
Maybe not even that.
I know. Okay, good show.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, now I got a Tony's for the Opposite Sex. Were these plays or musicals? Can you tell us?
I'm not going to say.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going to say. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, this is John from Oakland.
Hi, John.
Hi. Odd Couple and Importance of Being Earnest both had characters named Gwendolyn and Cecily.
That is correct.
Ah, yes.
Gwendolyn and Cecily. Very good. Of course, the Gwendolyn and Cecily were the Pigeon Sisters and the Odd Couple, and they were the two female leads in the Importance of Being Earnest.
I wonder if he did that on purpose. I'm sure he did.
That's a great. Anything else?
Nope, that's it.
Thank you very much.
Very good.
Bye-bye.
Oh, gosh.
And let's see. Jerry, it's your turn.
My turn again. Okay. I'm sorry. What are the literary sources of these three words?
Literary sources.
Poobah, P-O-O-H-B-A-H,
mm-hmm.
Quark, Q-U-A-R-K, and chortle. Literary sources of poobah, quark, and chortle.
Quark is something invented by a science fiction writer, isn't it?
No.
Okay. Poobah, chortle. So what are you asking here? You want the book they came from or the author?
The book, play, either a book or a play.
Is chortle Shakespeare?
Or a poem in one case. One is from a play, one is from a poem, and one is from a novel.
All right.
No, not Shakespeare.
All right. Is chortle the one from the play? Is chortle from a play?
No.
All right. Well, I'm not doing very well then.
I thought you would know these, huh?
Well, I thought so too, okay. But I didn't. Okay. Why don't you repeat the question?
What are the literary sources of these words, poobah, quark, and chortle, C-H-O-R-T-L-E?
I know.
One is a play, one is a poem, and one is a novel.
The Grand Poobah, I remember that. Is that originally what it was described as, the Grand Poobah?
I'm not sure.
Oh, that's from...
It may be.
That's from Gilbert and Sullivan. It's from Mikado.
Right. Very good.
All right. Finally.
The Grand is what gave it to
yes,
you.
Yes, yes. I had to sort of think that
Grand,
through.
Grand Poobah is from the Mikado.
All right.
Very good.
All right. So we're still looking for Quark and Chortle.
Chortle.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And let's go to a call.
And these are famous works.
All right. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi.
Hi.
It's James in Berkeley.
Hi, James.
I'd like to give a guess on the novels published in their entirety in New Yorker.
Yeah.
And the one that is in the article in the New Yorker this week that Jerry probably read is Philip Roth's The Ghostwriter.
That's correct.
But it was written in two segments, it says.
These are all serialized.
Right.
But they did appear first in the New Yorker. Okay.
Well, I've got the whole list here, but I'm not going to read them.
Well, that's very good of you. That's very good of you.
Because
that's where I did get it, of course, from the New Yorker.
So just give us one, then.
I did.
Oh, okay. All right.
The Ghostwriter.
Philip Roth's Ghostwriter.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you very much.
That was the only fictional work. And, yeah, to repeat, they were all serialized, except for Hiroshima. I'm not sure about the Ghostwriter. It probably was. Two parts.
All right. I'm going to give you some character names for Best Supporting Actor. In other words, these are the roles that won these various people the awards as Best Supporting Actor for the Academy Awards. And most of them are relatively recent, within the last 30 years. There's one that's a little bit older than that. So again, these are character names for roles that won the Best Supporting Actor Academy Award. So... And most of them are fairly recent. Number one, Hal Fields.
Fields?
Fields, F-I-E-L-D-S. Number two, Edwin Hoover, as in J. Edgar Hoover. Edwin Hoover. Number three, Dr. Wilbur Larch, L-A-R-C-H. Number four, Benjamin Rand, R-A-N-D. And number five is only known as Howard.
Okay, well, let's see if we can get a little narrowing down here because...
Yes.
Are these all leading characters?
No, these are all people who won the Academy Award for character for Best Supporting Actor. Okay, so they're not the leads.
Not the leads.
Not the leads.
This is the character's name.
This is the character's name. Yeah. Yes.
And they're all within 30 years.
Most of them are within 30 years. One is beyond that. One is older than that.
Are they all? Would you say they're all dramatic shows, or is it a mix?
It's, yeah, mostly dramatic, yeah, pretty much.
Howard.
So I'll give the names once more.
Well, it was Howard's Duck. Do you remember that one?
No, that's not
one.
The
worst movies ever.
No, number one, Hal Fields. Number two, Edwin Hoover. Number three, Dr. Wilbur Larch. Number four, Benjamin Rand. Number five, Howard, just Howard.
Larch sounds familiar to me, but I don't know.
It should. And a couple of these are from quite well-known books. And again, those are character names for people that won the Best Supporting Actor Academy Award. Those were their winning roles. So, and let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, it's Robert and Karen in Burrell Heights.
Hi.
And for Jerry's question on books that were produced in their entirety in The New Yorker, those are only novels, correct? Not nonfiction?
No,
the one novel was
okay.
Someone got was a ghostwriter. These are they're all nonfiction.
Okay, so I'm wondering
we have three left.
Would be by John McPhee, like Coming into the Country or Conversations with the Archdruid or Pine Barrens.
Well, no, I don't have those, but okay. I know he's written long pieces.
Yeah, he's written.
But I don't know if they were the entire book
of long pieces.
I think they were probably expanded in book form, but. I'm not sure. That's
okay.
Because it was in the New Yorker, I trust that these are correct.
They have really good fact checks.
Yeah, good source.
Which he wrote a really nice piece about. For Dana's question about Tonys for playing the opposite sex,
yes.
Wondering if it might be Mary Martin for Peter Pan and Nathan Lane for whatever his character was in Le Cage or Birdcage?
No. You're half right, so I will give you a bell for that. Mary Martin and Peter Pan, yes.
And then I have a question for you.
Yes.
According to the OED, as quoted in the New York Times, which author was the first to use the word T-shirt?
T-shirt?
In print.
Is there a time?
How long ago is it?
Yeah, a time frame on this?
I'm guessing this was in the 30s.
30s?
20s.
Is it in a famous work?
30s. It's in a fairly well-known work by a very well-known author.
30s, huh?
Mm-hmm. Huh. American?
Yes.
Ooh, boy. I've read most of Sinclair Lewis, and I can't recall anything like it. I don't know. Sinclair Lewis?
Sinclair Lewis.
All right.
Did you say it's a novel or a book or a play or what?
It's a novel.
It is a novel, okay.
T-shirt.
I was going to say The Streetcar Named Desire, but...
That would be good.
Yeah, no.
20s,
I don't think
30s. That's too early for that.
T-shirt. Does it figure prominently in the play, or is it just...
In the novel. I don't imagine it does.
Okay.
But...
the word...
So okay.
Coming to you via me second or third hand.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
Huh. All right.
I can't guess.
What is there? Can you tell me a little bit about the novel?
No, I'm afraid I can't.
In other words,
I have not read it.
Okay.
I didn't go back to the original source material to verify the New York Times.
All right.
Would you like me to tell you?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Oh.
In This Side of Paradise.
Oh.
Do you think he coined that term, or
it sounds like he may have coined the term for a garment that was becoming popular in the 20s.
And,
he at least popularized it.
And we didn't make a dime off of it, I guess.
Apparently not.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Bye-bye. And you are listening to Minds Over Matter. We are here every Sunday at 7 p.m. Hope you're enjoying the show. The panel is of two tonight. The well-known Bay Area author, Jerry Nachman. I'm your moderator, Dana Rodriguez. And if you'd like to join us here with a question or answer, the number is area code 415-841-4134. Again, that's area code 415-841-4134. And you're listening to us on 91.7 FM. That's KALW, your local public radio station. All right, and let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, it's Ed. How are you?
Good.
So, very good. I have a question, physics. If you, how do you weigh more standing at the equator or at the North Pole?
At the equator.
Or the North Pole. Which one do you weigh you're heavier at?
The equator.
And also, I'd like to ask why. Why? Why do you think it is?
Something to do with a gravitational pull?
Well, half. Actually, it's wrong. You weigh more at the North Pole. Do you know why?
Oh, let's see. Because you're wearing all those heavy clothes?
No, I'm assuming you're wearing yourself totally naked. Not shoes or socks or anything. So, no, there's physics reason for it.
All right. No, we don't know, my friend.
Let's see. Okay. So you weigh more at the North Pole because at the equator, the Earth is going at 24,000 miles per day, about 1,000 miles per hour. So that gives you centrifugal force, you know, like holding a rope.
Mm-hmm.
So the centrifugal force is trying to kick you out of Earth, right?
Right.
You know, you have the it's how you can make ice cream and all this thing. But when the thing rotates, you get an angular momentum force that tries to push you away, right?
Mm-hmm.
In fact, if Earth stops, all of us will fly in space at 1,000 miles per hour. If Earth would stop suddenly, all of us will... Do you understand it?
Not really.
Yeah, it's in a rudimentary
Somebody
way.
Somebody does, I'm sure.
Yes.
Okay, you do weigh more at the North Pole because at North Pole there's no rotation. You know, you're pretty much at the axis of Earth.
Right.
Okay? Or close to it. Okay, second question very quickly. I never asked a question about Egypt for a long time. I'll ask you this one. This pharaoh happened to live over 3,500 years ago, and he was called Napoleon of Egypt because, first of all, he was short, like Napoleon. Second, he conquered more land than anybody before him or even after him. In fact, he extended the border of Egypt all the way to the Black Sea near Russia.
Hmm.
And, okay, his last name ended with Moses, so it must have been about the time of, our prophet Moses. Do you know his name?
Not me.
Not the one played by Yul Brynner, I'm assuming.
I'll give another hint.
Yes.
The word Armageddon, which comes, it really means the Battle of Megiddo, which is one of his battles.
Oh.
Let's leave it to the... It is, I know, I don't know why I decided to ask such a difficult question.
All right, leave it out.
Leave it out to somebody.
All right, we will.
Have a good day.
Thanks, Eve.
Can I guess on the innate character name Howard?
Yes.
Was that the Fred McMurray character in Double Indemnity?
No, but Fred McMurray never won the Academy Award for anything.
Oh, I forgot their Academy Award.
Yeah, they always have to, be best supporting actor winners.
Oh, okay. Oh, supporting anyway.
Right.
Way off.
And his name was Walter Neff.
Walter, that's right.
Walter Neff in Double Indemnity.
Okay.
And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
This is Reed in San Francisco.
Hello.
Hi. Regarding the New Yorker nonfiction.
Yeah.
Rachel Carson, Silent Spring.
Correct. Very good.
Very good, yeah.
I have another possibility, too.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Truman Capote in Cold Blood.
Correct.
Very good.
One to go.
And I have a half answer. I don't recall the author, but was The Greening of America first published in The New Yorker?
I don't know. It may have been, but that's not the one I have.
That's not the one you have. No. Okay. That's two out of two.
Very good.
Yeah, very good.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
One more.
Okay. And Jerry, I think it's your turn.
Okay, well, we've got some word coinages. We already talked about one or about another word question. Could you tell me the order that these words were coined in terms of the earliest to the latest? I'll give you, there's about six of them, I guess. It's maybe seven. Okay. Google, spelled G-O-O-G-O-L, when it was a word. Software. Big Bang. Gobbledygook. Smog. Greenhouse effect, and global warming. Again, these words are Google, gobbledygook, software, Big Bang, smog, and greenhouse effect.
And you want these in the order of
if they were coined.
Of
the year. You don't have to get the exact year, but just...
Newest to...
Yeah, oldest? Earliest to latest, yeah.
Earliest to latest, okay. Oh, boy. Well, Google's been around for a little while. Let's see, software, Big Bang. Oh, I have to work on that.
Okay.
All right. Maybe we should read the words once more, would you?
All right. Google, Big Bang, gobbledygook, greenhouse effect, global warming, and Big Bang, and small
software.
And software, yeah.
All right. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, is that me?
It is you.
Yeah, this is David in Oakland.
Hi.
Hi. I have a couple of answers, or at least I think a couple of answers.
All right.
Jerry, Chortle is from Jabberwocky.
That's right. What is from? Yeah.
Chortle's from.
Very, that's right. That's right. Yeah. How about Quark? You know that?
Quark, I don't. I knew it at one point, but I can't recall it.
Okay.
Now.
You got one? Give him a bell.
Right. And, yes, and then the other one, Dana, for yours, the doctor. The only doctor I could think of is Michael Caine in Cider House Rules.
That's it. Dr. Wilbur Larch is Michael Caine in the Cider House Rules. Very good.
Right. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Good.
Okay, and I have a question for the two of you.
Okay.
There's a medical condition that was shared by that is shared by Dan Aykroyd, Christopher Walken, and actually Alexander the Great.
And who is the second one?
Dan Aykroyd, Christopher Walken, and Alexander the Great. And I'll give you its Latin name. You may be able to figure it out from its Latin name, but it's heterochromium iridum.
So, okay.
Lazy eye.
No. Is it? Iridum. I almost was going to say epilepsy, but it's not epilepsy.
No.
Is it? So it's a. All right. It's a physical condition.
Right. Not necessarily detrimental to your health.
Not necessarily detrimental.
A cross eye.
No, but
a dyslexia.
No, you can get from like you might get heterochromium iridum.
Chromium.
Well,
iridum.
He kind of
chromium. Irritable bowel syndrome.
No. It's eye related.
It is eye related.
Oh. Yeah.
I was going to say maybe restless leg syndrome.
No. Next, don't make a joke about that because we'll get
I didn't
in trouble.
Make a joke.
It's so
eye related, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. We have a possibility. Steve Wilcott suggested eye sensitivity to light.
No.
No. Okay. So is it? And it's not farsightedness or nearsightedness.
No.
And he said it's not lazy eye or double.
No.
Crossed eyes.
No, we don't know then.
Okay, heterochromium. It's two different eye colors.
Oh.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, anyway.
Thank you.
Okay. Great show as usual.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
And let's see, it's my turn, I guess. All right. What was the only non-musical play to win the Best Revival Tony twice?
Our Town?
No. All right, that was your guess.
Okay.
What was the only non-musical play to win the Best Revival Tony Award twice? And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hey, guys. It's Alec in San Francisco.
Hi, Alec.
Well, I knew Chortle. I'll have a guess at Quark and maybe at the orders of those words, and then I'll have a question for you.
Okay.
Is Quark from Vonnegut?
No, it is not. That's a good guess, but no.
So gobbledygook, I think, must be the oldest of those words.
Let me see. No, it's not.
Oh, okay. Well, forget the other ones then. Here's my question for you this week.
Yes.
What idea do the following people have in common?
Idea.
Cotton Mather, Sir Edmund Halley, John Cleve Sims, and Adolf Hitler. And after a guess or two, I'll add another two names if you don't get it.
Who are the two before Hitler?
So it's Cotton Mather, the preacher, mm-hmm. Sir Edmund Halley of Halley's Comet, John Cleve Sims, who was a sort of crackpot explorer from Ohio, not very famous, and Adolf Hitler. And I'll add the two names now, actually.
They all, they have different colored eyes.
Exactly. Well done, Jerry.
Does this have anything to do with the big lie?
No.
Okay.
It's something that would definitely be considered a crackpot theory today.
Okay.
And it was further expounded on, although probably not believed in to any degree, by Edgar Allan Poe and Edgar Rice Burroughs.
Edgar Rice Burroughs. Anything to do with a, no, it's a, I was going to say some sort of lost civilization or...
Trending that way, but that's not it.
An ancient civilization of some type?
Nope.
Okay. Trending that way, but not it. Is it an idea that is at all thought of today?
Maybe by some real lunatics, but no one would really pay attention to it now.
Okay, we've come
it
to the right
like
place.
It feels like more now. Of a pre-World War I idea, although Hitler apparently really had it.
You mean nobody, not even in Congress, huh?
As to that, I can't say. Yeah, they're not letting anybody into
the Tea Party. Cotton.
They all believed in the Tooth Fairy.
No? That is okay. Possible, but not what I have.
I don't know. I don't have any idea.
No, I'm sorry. We don't know.
They all believed that the Earth, or wanted to believe that the Earth is hollow, and there might be a whole different world.
Really?
Oh. Yeah. And then Poe and Edgar Rice Burroughs both expounded that in books.
Well, right. Okay.
You mean it isn't?
You're thinking of the Lost World kind of thing?
Yeah, but not pertaining to a civilization. So,
okay.
Cotton Mather thought, apparently, that there might be a religious paradise inside the Earth.
Mm.
Sir Edmund Halley simply thought that there might be sort of a miniature universe in there because, you know, the outer universe shows symmetry and spheres and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people sort of believe that. John Cleve Sims really believed that this was true and tried to lead some expeditions there from Ohio, though I'm not aware that he ever found it. He was Poe's source for the manuscript found in a bottle.
Oh, okay.
His novel, which is about basically bursting into a secret space within the Earth.
From Ohio, huh? He tried to lead the expedition.
Okay. Yeah, Ohio's favorite son, no doubt. And Edgar Rice Burroughs wrote a whole series of books about Pulsar, the world inside, where there's a sun in the center of the Earth, and then Tarzan visits it once. And Hitler wanted to conquer it.
Of course.
He wanted, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Right. Bye-bye. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, it's Andrew in Oakland.
Hi, Andrew.
The word quark is actually, I believe the physicist was Murray Gell-Mann who attached the word to the particle. And
he invented another word which I can't remember.
Oh, really?
I think was in the same word, article, no.
Got my physicist wrong then, but the original intention was for it to be pronounced quark, because the line is three quarks for Muster Mark. So quark rhymes with mark.
And well, I think it's the line
from James Joyce's Finnegan's Wake.
Quark comes from Finnegan's Wake, that's right.
All right, there we are.
Very good. Okay.
And I'll give a try on the other words, the order of the other words.
Okay, from earliest to latest.
Okay. Google, gobbledygook, smog, big bang, greenhouse effect, and software.
No.
Okay.
Way off, I'm afraid.
Way off. Okay.
Good effort, though.
Google must be the oldest, then, if gobbledygook isn't, because Google has been around maybe...
It's not the oldest. It's...
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's the third oldest.
Never mind.
Okay.
I have a question.
Yes.
This is really pretty obscure. I don't know why this came into my brain, but if the early 1990s TV series Northern Exposure, I don't know if you ever watched it.
A little bit.
It took place in the fictional town of Sicily, Alaska, and the founding myth of this town was that it was founded by a lesbian couple, Sicily and Roslyn. So I was wondering if you knew what the significance of Roslyn was.
No idea.
Something very specific.
the origin of, you mean why they used Rosalind?
Why they used Rosalind, but it was very specific to the production.
Anything to do with Shakespeare?
No.
The playwright or director's mother.
It doesn't have to do with it. Is it Rosalind in this myth? It was Cicely and Rosalind were people, but Rosalind, why they chose it, it's not a person.
It's not a person.
Not a person.
No idea.
No.
Okay, it's Cicely, Alaska, was the fictional town. Rosalind, Washington, was the real town that they filmed it in.
Oh. Okay.
Ah, okay.
That makes sense.
That's good. Good one.
So, anyway, little piece of trivia.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And you are listening to Minds Over Matter. Hope you're enjoying the show. We are here every Sunday at 7 p.m. If you'd like to give us a call, the number is area code 415-841-4134. Jerry, let's repeat any questions that haven't been answered yet.
Well, I'm looking for... I was asking for 5 books that were printed in their entirety, even serialized in the New Yorker first. And we have all of them except one. And I'm looking for the order that these words were coined in. A global warming, gobbledygook, software, Google, smog, greenhouse effect, Big Bang, and that's it.
All right. I asked, what is... Yeah. Yeah, no, that's it. Are you done?
Yeah, that's it.
All right. What is the only non-musical play to win the Tony Award for Best Revival twice? And I gave you some character names for roles that won Oscars for Best Supporting Actor. One of them has been gotten. That's Dr. Wilbur Larch, Michael Caine in The Cider House Rule, so that gives you the idea. We're still looking for Hal Fields, Edwin Hoover, Benjamin Rand, and Howard. Just Howard.
Is that play possibly that was revived and won Tony was Death of a Salesman?
It was Death of a Salesman.
Okay.
Very good. So you lurched in there and got that.
Well, I didn't lurch. I just very calmly thought of it.
And two performers have won Tony Awards portraying members of the opposite sex. Not cross-dressers, just totally members of the opposite sex. One of our callers got Mary Martin, who obviously played a boy in Peter Pan. What is the other one? Okay, and let's go to a call.
Is the other a boy playing a girl?
No. Well, yes.
Woman.
Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Yes.
Hi, it's Thomas in Berkeley.
Hi, Thomas.
And I just had one of my answers, and I would have been wrong, so I was so glad that the person was right. So basically, this Tony opposite sex guy?
Yes.
Is it Harvey Fierstein from Hairspray?
Yes, Hairspray? Harvey Fierstein in Hairspray. Very good.
Oh, I was going to guess that, but I was thinking of Torch Song Trilogy, and he was just
no,
a...
No, uh-uh.
Oh, okay. Very good,
very good,
Thomas.
Now, I have a weird little question that's trivia. And basically, it's the narrator's surname is Burden. And one is Jack Burden and Jim Burden. And they are the narrators of the particular books that are pretty famous.
Oh, it's the Jack Burden is the narrator of All the King's Men.
Yeah.
And so you're saying that Robert Penn Warren... There are two other Burdens that wrote or that narrated novels by him.
Right. No, there's a Jim Burden that is in another novel by one of our American writers, who is the narrator.
Oh, Jim Burden. Jim Burden.
One of our female writers in the early period.
Early period of what?
Of American writers.
Okay. And what? I'm sorry, Jim Burden and what was the other one?
Jack Burden, you got. He's the narrator of All the King's Men.
Right.
And who is the narrator, Jim Burden, in what book?
Okay, but wasn't there another Burden as well?
You know, I was thinking you were going to do that to me. Because I don't know another Burden.
Oh, all right. Okay, I thought you gave them a three at the top.
I thought you said three, too, yeah.
So.
No, just Jim and Jack.
Okay. Huh.
Jim is by, you know, one of the famous American writers in the beginning of women. Big novelist.
Big novelist.
Yeah.
So, you mean like an Edith Wharton big novelist?
One of her peers.
One of her peers. Willa Cather?
Yeah.
Oh, so Willa Cather... Death Comes to the Archbishop?
Nope, the other big one.
My Antonia?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, I got a bill.
All right.
Happy.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, let's see here. All right. The only scenery in this play is a leafless tree in Act 1 and a tree with leaves on it in Act 2. The only scenery in this play is a leafless tree in Act 1 and a tree with leaves on it in Act 2.
Is this a classic play?
It is a classic play. I'm speaking of the original production. I don't know. I suppose.
Oh, yeah. That's right, yeah.
But
The Cherry Orchard.
No. That's okay. A good guess, but no.
Okay.
All right. That's your guess.
Oh, I give one only?
For now. For now.
Okay.
The only scenery in this play, a very famous play, is a leafless tree in Act 1 and a tree with leaves on it in Act 2. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
I don't know. Are you speaking with me?
I am speaking with you.
Ah, very good. I apologize. I'm calling a second time in answer to the question, what is a quark?
Yes.
A quark is a proton. It's made up of quarks. There are two up quarks, one down quark, blah, blah, blah. But it's one of the few things discovered by physicists which has to do with all four of the known forces in the universe, electromagnetism, gravitation, strong force, and the weak force. Murray Gell-Mann, this is the first came across, or theorized it in 1964, as did George Zweig.
Well, I guess he popularized it, but it first appears in Finnegan's Wake as a word.
Well, maybe. Oh, okay. Well,
so yeah, I'll give you that.
Well read.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was discovered in the real world in 1968 at the Stanford Linear Accelerator. So.
Okay.
Bye. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hello.
Hi, you're on.
This is Glenn.
Hi, Glenn.
Hi. Did you mention the weather today?
Did I mention the weather?
Yeah.
Hot. Humid.
It's humid.
Incredible.
Yes.
So anyway, what was your guess for the play?
Oh, for the question I just asked?
Yes, about the tree.
It was The Cherry Orchard.
Oh, was that the correct answer?
That was not.
Hmm.
Would you like to hazard a guess?
Hmm.
It's a classic American play.
It is a classic play.
Yeah.
Not American. Aha.
Yeah.
Aha.
Let's do something else first.
All right.
The supporting actors.
Yes.
Now, what time span are we talking about for those seasons?
Most of them are within the last 30 years. One is a little bit older.
So, Howard.
That is the older one.
Okay. Was that Picnic? Was that...
Not Picnic. No.
And then the Edwin?
Hoover.
Was that Victor Bono?
Oh, Edwin. No.
Oh, God.
Now, remember, these are all winners of the Best Supporting Actor, not nominees.
Oh, okay. Was the play Waiting for Godot?
The play was Waiting for Godot.
Ah, all right.
Very good.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Very good.
All right. Thank you.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Yes, the tree in Act 1 had no leaves on it. In Act 2, it did have leaves on it. That play was Waiting for Godot.
Is Hal Fields, one of them anyway, I just picked that out. Was that the character actor in The Best Years of Our Lives who lost an arm? Or lost
no,
a
that was Homer Parrish.
Homer Parrish.
Hal Fields is much more recent.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, you said 30 years.
Okay. Right, okay. Right. And the number to join us is area code 415-841-4134. Again, that's area code 415-841-4134. Jerry, it's your turn.
Well, I'd like to recuse you. Is that possible with only one other person?
I guess so.
Okay. Kind of a two-part political state. Only one president was not affiliated with a political party. Who was he? And who is the nation's oldest governor?
You mean currently?
Currently.
Or ever.
Yeah, currently, right.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Who is the only president who is not affiliated with a political party, and who is the nation's oldest governor currently?
Currently?
I have to keep you out of the... I'll let you answer at the end of the show.
Okay. Currently. Oh, all right. And so I can't answer either one of those?
Not now.
All right. Let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Oh, hi, this is Linda from Richmond.
Hi, Linda.
I have the answer to the actors who played other sex. One of them was Julie Andrews in Victor Victoria.
That's right.
And the other one was the actor who played Mrs. Doubtfire, Robin...
Williams.
I can't remember his last name.
Williams.
Yes.
Now, but the question was, I mean, you're sort of, I mean, you're right that they portrayed members of the opposite sex, at least for part of the movie. But my question was, I asked the two performers who've won Tony Awards for being on Broadway, portraying members of the opposite sex, and so those were not on Broadway. Those were in the movies.
Movies, yeah.
So the ones I was looking for were Mary Martin, who played Peter Pan, and Harvey Fierstein, who played Edna Turnblad in Hairspray.
Yeah, okay.
So you had the movies, right?
You had the movie ones, right?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, Sid. I just will give you the answer for the Pharaoh. This man was so clever that actually his battlefield are studied in the American Military Academy, including West Point. His name is Thutmose III. As far as the first question about what do you weigh more, I should make very, very simple similarity. All of us have been around merry-go-round. Well, the Earth is a big, huge merry-go-round. And, you know, if you're sitting in one of the horses, you kind of get pulled away from or pushed away from the center, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but if you're sitting in the pole, you don't feel anything. So when you're pulled away from the center, that counteracts the gravity or some of the gravity. So you actually you weigh less at the equator and weigh more at the North Pole or the South Pole because there is not any rotation around that area. Which
didn't Dana say that about the Earth's gravity?
Well, if you are on the equator, then you have the Earth's gravity is pulling you towards the center of Earth, correct?
Okay.
And then centrifugal force is pushing you away because they're trying to kick you out of there, right? Like the merry-go-around. So there is some effect there, but no effect because no rotation. Let's assume the North Pole, the actual, and the polar pole are the same location. You don't have any rotation there, so you are not pushed away as you are in the equator.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ed. Bye-bye. Okay. All right. Let's see here. What do we got? 14, 13 minutes left. I have a list of, this is according to Forbes magazine, of the 5 most polite countries in the world. In other words, if you travel there, the people are going to be awfully nice to you. What are the 5 most polite countries in the world? This is according to Forbes magazine, I believe. And probably the list of complaints tourists make when they come back to the United States.
Japan.
No.
No.
Japan is in the top 10, but not in the top 5.
Okay. Finland.
No.
No.
So once more, according to Forbes magazine, what are the 5 most polite countries in the world?
How do they determine that? I'd like to know.
I don't know. I suppose they took a survey amongst people that traveled there.
Okay.
Again, what are the 5 most polite countries in the world? And the number to join us is area code 415-841-4134. Again, that's area code 415-841-4134. We have a couple of lines open right now. Let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hello, it's Marky and Maddie. How are you all doing?
Good.
Well, friendly countries, how about, say, Finland?
No.
I said that, but it didn't work.
Oh, sorry. Right, I have a question I've been trying to always remember to ask you. It's on baseball stadiums. There are 2 baseball stadiums of the 30 in operation right now. There are 2 of them that do not have statues of any kind on its premises, whether outside the ballpark or inside the ballpark.
Hmm.
There are only 2 that do not have any statues.
Well, but the Tampa Bay Rays Stadium.
No, they have one.
They do?
Yeah.
Okay.
How about Detroit?
Nope, they've got...
several, kind
they've
of.
They've got several all around.
All right.
Oh.
Hmm.
Does I'll narrow it down. It's on the West Coast.
Oh.
Oh.
Does that have anything to do with their age?
No, not really. Fenway Park's has been getting a few of them, as well as Wrigley Field.
And it's on the West Coast. Well, there only can be a few. Seattle?
No.
Is there? What about Oakland?
They don't have one.
Oh, interesting.
Interesting. All right. So Oakland and...
San Diego?
Nope.
Anaheim?
Nope. Azusa, Cucamonga? No.
I don't know. Dodger Stadium?
Yeah, that's the other one.
Okay.
Dodger Stadium has no... Really?
No statue.
That's astonishing.
Mm. Yeah.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Glad I had that back up because I wanted to get in on Antoine Agadeau. But anyway, so we're done.
All right, thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
That's quite amazing.
Yeah. I suppose it won't be long now. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, it's Bob in Inverness.
Hi, Bob.
Did anybody get Hiroshima by John Hershey?
Somebody
yes.
did get that, yeah. Dana
okay.
did, right. That's the first one, yeah.
That's what I thought, but I missed the beginning of it.
Yeah.
So did anybody get Bhutan, or is Bhutan one of those friendly countries?
Once more?
B-U-T-A-N?
No.
Okay, I would have guessed Japan, too. Okay,
Japan is in the top 10, but not in the top 5.
Yeah. Okay, bye.
Bye, thank you. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, it's David from San Francisco.
Hi, David.
Hi, did anyone answer the president and the governor question?
Not yet. No.
Well, we're going to guess George Washington is unaffiliated with a party.
Correct.
And then Jerry Brown is the oldest governor.
Also correct.
Very good.
All right.
Very good.
Did we get 2 rings?
There you go.
Thank you very much.
Excellent. You're welcome.
Excellent.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And if you'd like to join us here on Minds Over Matter, we have a few minutes left. Please call 415-841-4134. Again, that's area code 415-841-4134. Let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, this is Mark and Naomi.
Hi, Mark. Hi, Naomi.
Hi. I think that what we have is not exactly a question or an answer, but...
You just want to ramble?
Well, no, it's very brief.
Okay, go ahead.
Harvey Fierstein. Fierstein.
Yeah, well, some people say, I don't know, there are different versions of that. What about him?
That's the way to pronounce his name, Harvey Fierstein.
Okay, there you go.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, good night.
Bye-bye. And next call?
It's Fierstein, I can tell you.
I had a guess about the book published in The New Yorker. Was it Hannah Arendt's Eichmann and Drew?
It was. Very good. That's
excellent.
One.
Excellent. Excellent.
Thanks. I forgot to say my name. It's Ileana in Oakland.
Thank you, Ileana.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye. And the number to join us is area code 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. All right, let's see. What was the first all-paperback bookstore in the United States? It's a famous bookstore, and it's still in business. What was the first all-paperback bookstore?
It's City Lights.
City Lights? Yeah. Very good. Excellent. Okay. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Yes, hello. This is Karen and Robert again in Bernal Heights.
Hello.
With the other half, we think of the question about... the Tony Award winners who played actress of the opposite sex. Did that question get fully answered?
It did. Well, at least according to my reference material, it was just Mary Martin and Peter Pan and Harvey Fierstein and Hairspray.
Okay. Not D.D. Wong and M. Butterfly?
Oh. No, because he was impersonating a woman,
right,
but
right.
he really was a man all along. So.
Oh, okay. All right.
Good. Very, very good guess, though.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And,
excellent. Yeah.
Yeah. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, this is Amelie.
Hi, Amelie.
Hey, I'm calling from Mountain View, and I stumbled across you guys about 20 minutes ago and pulled my car over. It's been riveting.
That's a first, I think.
Thank you very much.
I didn't even know you were out here. This is, like, the most fascinating thing besides my own head. I love having you guys.
Well, you've missed 20 years of our show.
Yeah, we've been on for 20 years.
Oh, shit. I, you know what? I'm, I'm slow, but usually not that slow. But I'll pay attention. Don't worry.
All right, good.
We're glad to have you aboard.
Yes.
Thanks, friends. I'm thinking that Denmark is really one of the friendliest people and the friendliest travelers. So working backwards, I think that they're on the list.
You are right. That's number five on the list. Very good. And I'm going there in a little while, or not a little while, in a few weeks. So.
Ah, have you ever had Aquafit? Are you a drinking man?
Not very much, but I'll take it under consideration.
Give it a shot if you like anise. You
okay.
Know, and I would follow it with a good beer. They'll set you up with a nice beer, but you want to chase it with something.
All right, I'll keep it in mind.
What about that? Can I work backwards? Can I do like? Is somebody in South America? Is for friendly travelers?
No, not South America. Oh, yes, there is somebody in South America. I'm sorry. I had to look at my list.
Some country, you mean?
Yes, there is somebody in South America. You're right.
Okay. I'm just... I want to say Peru, but I don't know.
It's not Peru.
I'll give you one. Well-traveled?
It's definitely a well-traveled nation. Or a country. Yes, Brazil.
Yeah, I was going to guess that.
Very good.
Well, thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot. And then keep on listening to the show.
It's every Sunday, 7 to 8?
That's right.
Hi, Am. All right. You count me in.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Dan, another country has to be Canada.
No.
No.
Not in the top five, anyway.
Well, I don't travel much either, but that's one of the friendliest countries out there.
Brazil and Denmark. All right.
Yeah,
very
okay.
Good.
Okay.
And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hello.
Hi.
Oh, hi. This is Valerie in San Francisco.
Hello.
What about Australia?
Not Australia. They're the most raucous. I don't know about the most polite. But
sounds like you're Australian.
I've liked all the Australians I've ever met, but they're not on the list of the most polite countries anyway.
Okay, that's it.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
No offense. I think she's
no offense,
Australian.
No. Yeah. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Oh, I believe that's me.
It is you.
Just a possible correction. I was under the impression that Albert Henry was the oldest all-paperback bookstore.
Oh.
I may well be wrong.
Where's that?
It's no longer in business, but...
I think...
It used to be on Geary and just a little bit west of Taylor.
No, maybe the question should be what was the first all-paperback bookstore in the U.S. that is still in business, but it wasn't written that way. So all I had was what was the first all-paperback bookstore in the U.S.? And according to this, it was City Lights.
What was the name of the store, sir?
Albert Henry?
I never heard of that.
Huh. Oh, it was a sort of famous place, not downtown, but in the Geary Corridor. You have the sort of kitty corner from the cliff.
Well, City Lights goes back to the 50s, I guess, the Beatnik era.
Very late 50s, I think.
So this was in the 40s, huh?
I don't know exactly when it opened. I knew some people that worked there. I met the wife of the original owner, and they all thought it was the first all-paperback bookstore.
Huh, okay.
And they also carried, I'm surprised nobody has heard of it.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll leave it open, and if somebody wants to call and give us some more information, they can.
Yeah, I don't have dates or anything, so I can't really question it, and I'm taking up too much of your time.
That's okay. We're almost done, though. Thank you very much.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. All right, time to clean up, Jerry. What do we got?
Well, I wonder if I should hold over these coined words, but...
No, don't.
Okay. Okay, well, smog is the oldest, 1905.
All right.
Greenhouse effect is the next oldest, surprisingly, 1917. Google is third, 1920. Gobbledygook, about 1945. Big Bang, 1950. Let's see. Global warming, 52. And software, 53.
All right. The five most polite countries, according to the survey done by Forbes magazine, number one, Brazil, number two, the Philippines, number three, Thailand, number four, Portugal, number five, Denmark. Oh. And the character, character actor, the names for character actors who won the Best Supporting Actor Academy Award. Hal Fields was Christopher Plummer in Beginners just a couple of years ago. Edwin Hoover was Alan Arkin in Little Miss Sunshine. Benjamin Rand was Melvin Douglas in Being There. And Howard was Walter Houston in Treasure of the Sierra Madre.
Ah, yes.
So if we did not get your call, we do apologize. Please